My ambition after that trip to the Highlands was simply to see if Tasmania could make a really good single malt whisky.
We don't expect everyone to like these wines, so yes, there's some risk.
Drink more sherry, because that's when you can really educate yourself on what happens in maturation.
The thing is with Australian natives, you put them in a gin, the aftertaste invariably is just bitter and unpalatable.
I think the Irish whisky landscape is going to be wildly different over the next 5 years.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits, and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today.
Hawke's Brewing was founded by advertising creatives Nathan Lennon and David Gibson, together with former Australian Prime Minister Bob Hawke in 2017. Bob Hawke has since passed away, but his legacy lives on at Hawke's Brewing through a unique arrangement that diverts his royalty share in the business to Landcare Australia, the environmental charity he founded in 1989. We'll talk about that later on in this interview with Nathan and head brewer Brody French, as well as reflecting on some key milestones for the business. Hawke's brought production of its beers entirely in-house since commissioning its Marrickville brewery in late 2021. And soon after, the company entered the hospitality arena in spectacular fashion with the establishment of the Bob Hawke Beer and Leisure Centre, incorporating the Lucky Prawn Chinese restaurant. Also coming up this episode, we'll find out a bit about Brody's brewing passions, Hawke's evolution from a single SKU brand to a more diverse product offering, and its national expansion plans, including recent efforts to establish a beachhead in Melbourne. First up, though, I asked Nathan about the significance to Hawke's of the Marrickville venue, which recently notched up 12 months of trading.
Yeah, we're still trying to get a gauge on, from a data point of view, what impact it might be having. I think it's exceeded our expectations, certainly as in terms of venue operations and turnover and all that sort of stuff.
It's ahead of your estimates that you
put down.
Yeah,
it is. Well, you just don't know, right? This is the first time we'd set up our own sort of hospitality site as well. We felt confident in at least knowing that we were telling the story that we wanted to tell and had been wanting to tell through a deeper experience for many years. So to be able to sort of unveil that through a more immersive and tangible, tactile and taste-centric, I suppose, experiences. What I've been observing in terms of what I'm observing inside is you just could never have picked the demographic that would have been drawn towards that venue. We always knew that we wanted to set it up as a local base, almost like a reliable pub for those that are in Marrickville and the wider inner west. And I knew that there'd be maybe a little bit of a novelty in the sense of what we were doing through the Lucky Prawn Chinese restaurant and whatnot, that it would get visitation from outside the area and it'd be a bit of a destination, as is so many of the other breweries that are around us. And I hope we've been a nice complement to the range of brewery venue experiences in the area. So, yeah, it's been really great. I think from a brand point of view, I think it's certainly helped embed who we are as a beer business, created more legitimacy. Obviously, you walk in now and you look up and there's the sort of stainless steel cathedral of Orr Broads' Wayne Kieran Brigham's senior brewer's tanks upstairs, which is a, you know, really beautiful architectural kind of decision that was kind of put to us by our architect at the start. So I think that's really special. And then I think just people wanting to spend a significant amount of time in Hawke's, inside the brewery facility and inside the venue, as opposed to sort of seeing it as a, I guess, maybe like a one beer stop before they go on somewhere else. You know, it certainly meant that we've been able to see our guests get the full experience.
You must have, you know, with the estimates that you made, you must have been banking on it being pretty successful. Looking around, I can kind of see there's a lot of money tied up in that space, definitely more so than some of the other tap rooms we see in the area that tend to sort of be a little bit more rustic.
I think the space that we had in the entire facility really dictated it as well. There's a lot of rooms, 2,100 square metre site. So brewing comes first. You know, we work with Broads at the start to build the brewery that he wants to brew in and build his team around, with an idea of getting to scale, in many ways a bit of a forever site. And then there's a component that you have left over, and it wasn't 100 square meters. Like, it was a pretty big sort of space that we still had. But you're right, to make it viable, we were given the opportunity to go a little bit harder. And that worked for us as well, because we wanted to have a bit more fun. We wanted to showcase not just our beer, but I think showcase the story. I mean, the depth that we see in the brand, and be able to kind of have that, to have that ability through the size of the space, and also try and make it a bit of a cozy experience and not just feel like a large industrial kind of warehouse that you've sort of might have had that experience a few times. And we just wanted to treat people into a different type of experience, and definitely something that they might not expect. And that's, I think, the feedback that we're hearing a lot is somebody saying, oh, you should come and check out this brewery. And then people kind of walk in and they're like, oh, you didn't tell me it was like this. And, you know, that's nice, because that's what we'd hoped, that we would have been able to sort of turn it on its head a little bit. But yeah, it's a risk still, right? You know, it wasn't the cheapest of builds, but we're pretty confident in the story and the authenticity that we've created, and also making food a pretty important focus, and thinking about kind of how that plays out for us in terms of consistent trade all through the week and not just a weekend destination.
What about the, and this is probably where we can bring in Brody as well, but, you know, I'm just sort of interested in the evolution of the beers that you have and how that's kind of changed from what you thought it was going to be when you started Hawks, because I think I heard you say on Radio Brews News with Matt that you initially thought it was only going to be a one SKU brand or something along those lines. You can correct me if I got that wrong. Has sort of the product offering that you've got now, is it vastly different to what you thought it would be when you launched?
It's interesting. I think we always felt that there would be a bedrock of Hawks in terms of having a real simple core range. We were obviously pivoting a little bit by launching with just a lager at the time, even though looking back, I'm glad that we did now.
And is that your top-selling SKU, or is it the pale?
They're sort of, I think it's pretty even, isn't it, Broads? Yeah. It's pretty neck and neck, which is nice. But as I think we journeyed further into being in the industry and just as drinkers ourselves, we started to kind of open up to the idea of trying different styles and whatnot. So I suppose we would romanticize that Hawks would, at some point when we had that level of control and an ability to actually pour some different beers, that it would be it wouldn't be a lineup of like 10 lager taps, that's for sure. So that's been super fun for me selfishly as a drinker, and I think the whole team and the culture of Hawks being big crew of beer lovers like any brewery team are. But what's your perspective, Brodes, on that?
Yeah, I mean, as a brewer first and foremost, not every brewer is like this. Every brewer is quite different. But what interests me most about brewing is consistency in brewing the same product, the same over and over and over again. No matter how boring that sounds to a production brewer, that's kind of the end goal, is to make someone taste batch A, C, D, and E and have them all taste the same. It sounds boring as hell, but that's interesting to a brewer. But yeah, opening up that tap room obviously gives the guys a creative outlet to brew the beers that they want. And we're pretty pragmatic about it. It's like the brews are seasonal. We're not going to go and release Irish Stout in the middle of summer or anything like that. So we're thinking 12 months in advance about what we're doing, what brews we'd like to see, and what the guys, the other brewers want to brew, basically. So we need to keep it on brand as well. We're not a brewery out there trying to make a Imperial Stout or triple hazy IPA or something like that. Like, that's just not on brand for Hawk. So
only double hazy IPAs.
Yeah, just for Gabs. That is our Gabs beer. Yeah, it's kind of, there's a few factors that go into deciding what beer we do next. It's not kind of just plucking a SKU out of the air and going, oh, let's do that.
In terms of commercially rolling out into tinnies and...
Yeah, that too. Top secret, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, Bros is spot on. It's a bit of a hybrid of, we want to be that reliable brand that, you know, you can trust those core SKUs to deliver consistently every time, because that will build, that's the foundation of what we are. And I think what the Hawks in itself stands for a lot of people is maybe a a simplification or a straight down the line and honest appreciation of beer. Nothing too tricky, I suppose. But we do have the benefit, like all other breweries that have tap rooms, to truly explore, you know, new styles and road test the liquid, road test our own core as well, and just fine tune and dial in the beers that we're putting out into the world, but also testing interesting ideas for a potential new release commercially in tinnies, which we don't take lightly.
You haven't released a lot of limited editions in cans. Like, is it the Legend?
Yeah.
Is that like an annual IPA release or something along
exactly.
those lines? I don't know if I've seen anything else other than that.
No. Yeah, the last year and a half, well, for instance, COVID happened. And I think coming out of that, we literally were finishing the build and of the brewery and the venue, and many of us managing what those separate worlds were going to be for us, and how we all work together, and the team obviously growing from 15 to 60, or, you know, with casuals and, you know, Chinese restaurant and all sorts of added complexity to the business. Mm. That also has probably put, I suppose, what the next sort of commercial release is like on the back burner a little bit. We want to be really prudent with that. Mm. You know, it's a busy category and it's cluttered and it's saturated, all those words, and we don't want to put things out, because when we put something out, we don't want to put out a limited, we want to put something out for longevity. But you can never take for granted like how precious that real estate is in store, so we need to know that it's going to work.
Yeah, and I guess physically in the brewery, we're not geared towards limiteds. If you look at our line, it's very much dictated by that setup. So you've got printed cans only. There's no labelling. It's not a PackTech applicator. It's a Westrock cluster wrapper. So it's all these sort of cardboard wraps. So you can imagine there's a fair bit of investment that goes into designing something like that and then getting it 24,000 of them printed with the plates. So there's quite an investment in just releasing a new beer, even without the idea. So, yeah, our line sort of is very skewed towards our core range. And
keeps us honest.
Yeah. Any new beer that comes in, it would be part of the core range. It's not It's not going to be there for a hot minute. So we'll brew it a few times, we'll get it right, and then we will release it. But, yeah, it's thought about well in advance.
And, Brody, did you kind of have any particular brewing inspiration or particular styles that you personally love to make that you've managed to bring a little bit of your own passions into the business in that respect as well?
Yeah, definitely. And I think Hefeweizen is that style. It's challenging to brew because it's 50% wheat. It's challenging through the brew house, but also from a flavour perspective, the balance is critical. If you get that balance wrong on that beer, It's not a great beer. If it's too bitter, too sweet, if your esters aren't under control, like it's one style you have to really know what to do with. And that's why I find that beer most enjoyable to drink, but also brew, because it is challenging.
Well, there's one thing that I have liked about coming in is that you have made some of those classic styles. I think I'd be hard pressed to find a Hefeweizen in any other brewery in the inner west. You know, like when you had one last year, I think it was.
Yeah, and the Belgian wit as well.
Yeah. And also, yeah, ESBs and stouts and that kind of thing. And so it's good to, you know, those are styles that I personally really like to see. And often these days, we don't see them too often.
Yeah, and I guess if that was to somewhat define me as a brewer, it's very much a traditionalist. I'm not there to change, you know, how styles are sort of guided. Very much, if there's a style and that's how it's been brewed for the last 100 years, I'm all about it. Like that's kind of the way I like to think about it. And that's not to say we're not being adventurous or sort of trying to do new things process-wise. But for an ESB or an Irish stout or, you know, Belgian wit, I'm very much about, let's not try and add strawberries to this. Let's just keep this as a Belgian wit, and that's what it should be. Like, that's how it's been brewed for the last however many years. Like I was saying, it's sort of our one-hit wonders, thought about 12 months in advance about what we want to do and is it true to Hawks. And it's sort of got to attract the people that come to Hawks as well. So you've got a whole range of different people coming to Hawks. 80-year-olds down to 18-year-olds, and there's a broad range we need to appeal to.
Prime ministers,
that's true too. Albo's been in a couple of times.
It's hard to get Albo on a hazy though, isn't it? He's straight down the line.
I will say though, he's good at pouring a beer. Yeah, I saw him pour a lager that day, and he was.
Yeah. Has he got his RSA? Does he?
I think he served himself.
I hope.
What are you supposed to do?
Yeah, that's it.
And so I think the Legend IPA probably came out fairly soon after you opened the venue in Cairns last year. And so does that mean, is there a new release of that coming sometime soon?
Yeah, not this year. The answer's not never again. It's just not this year. There needs to be focus on other things.
Such as? are there other new releases in the pipeline?
Yeah, we're looking at something for summer.
Okay. It's a fair way off still, though.
Sorry, spring, I suppose.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, we're looking at something, it's in development. It's actually been on tap in the Leisure Centre. But, you know, just exploring, doing some research on it, and, we'll see.
And how's it going with building the brand out in retail at the moment? It's a pretty tough market, I think, for independent breweries generally at the moment out in retail. How are you guys finding it with your brand?
Oh, not to give too much away. I don't know. I think we're faring pretty well, considering, I would say. I think we're not too far off what we'd hoped. We're very aware of, as we learn more anyway, of the sensitivities around, you know, from on a macro level, even outside of our industry, what's happening. And I think our approach is business as usual. We're looking for growth, but we're also going to build a financially stable business. You know, we're also kind of being quite prudent with that. And I guess your risk taking element is reduced. And we're very fortunate that we've got a really, you know, we've also got a really healthy business in terms of the venue side. And, you know, it's obviously in better cash flow than what you'd find if you're just a wholesale business. So just kind of managing the balance of that appropriately over the next kind of 12 to 24 months and see what happens. And we're probably priced fairly well out there in terms of where our kind of target drinker wants us to be. You know, so I think we're still sort of probably sitting in that sort of like premium indie area and offering pretty good sort of promotions and whatnot. We're, I think, fairly good value out in the market while still kind of like, having that kind of craft integrity that we've been trying to build for a long time, but I think really sort of reinforced now with Brody and his team and getting some good results on the awards circuit. And I think properly legitimizing Hawks as a brewery. Yeah, we'll see. It's interesting times out there.
Yeah. You've got, you know, an experienced team around you as well. I've noticed with catching myself up with some of the appointments that you've made over the last year or two, and you've got a, you know, very experienced CEO and very experienced national sales manager as well. So must be great kind of having those heads in the room when it comes to deciding your strategy around this sort of challenging time.
Yeah, I think we've got a really good management team across all areas, from brewing and head of supply and whatnot. Everyone thinks really commercially. It's incredible. I think from day zero, both Dave and I knew that we would never be able to do this alone. You know, Bob was really big on the cabinet that he built around him when he was leading government. And over the journey, we've been able to attract and keep really good people that feel right for the culture of the business, but I think also for weathering storms through COVID and obviously what's happening out there in the market right now. Yeah, just good people with good heads on their shoulders. If it was just Dave and I still, you know, we'd still be running around town trying to paint Hawkey murals and
the important things. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good to have some grown-ups in the business and then, you know, hopefully Dave and I get a little bit of rope every now and then to play creatively and try and do something a little bit different.
What's the latest with the Landcare partnership? I think I saw that you just recently passed $400,000 worth of funds raised for those guys, which is pretty significant.
Thank you. Yeah, we're stoked. We're really proud of that. Yeah, I think by end of fin year, we'll have eclipsed 450. So we'll get to $500,000 this year in terms of like how we're tracking in terms of fundraising and all that stuff. And, you know, it's obviously the reason that Bob came on board in the first place. So it's an integral part of the origin story for Hawks. And so, yeah, really proud of the money that we've been able to raise, not only through his generosity, but, you know, some fundraising endeavours outside of that. We even do things like weekly raffles at the Leisure Centre, and Sue, funnily enough, his daughter helps us out with those occasionally. And it's a really important part of the Origin story, but I think what it's also done for us is just made us really look carefully at the way in which we kind of govern the business in general, but also from a sustainability point of view. You know, we're not perfect, and I think we've still got a long way to go, but really proud of how we're looking for ways to do better on that side of things in terms of reduction of impact. And then obviously the work that Brody has put into that from an operations point of view upstairs, you know, some novel stuff. And then we've also been doing some interesting work with UTS Tech, with their team over there. We've essentially set up a bit of an experiment.
Is this the hydroponic lettuce?
Project Lettuce.
I haven't noticed it when I've been in there, so I don't know how long
it must have just been harvested.
Yeah, tell us about that. Is that already, are you already using the lettuces in the restaurant?
Yeah, exactly.
That's very cool.
Yeah. It's a hydroponic indoor farm system. The idea being that we're experimenting with the use of excess CO2 emitted out of the fermentation process and how we can use that in that system to do our best to close that loop. And it's an ongoing experiment with the team at UTS, and experimenting with not only those levels but different types of vegetation, obviously lots of different types of lettuce. You know, the idea being that we can then use that produce downstairs in the Lucky Prawn and I guess mitigate the purchase of lettuce and transport and all those sorts of things that have a far bigger footprint than what you'd think, and see if we can maybe come to something that can be scalable, that we can open source and release and that information for either our industry or other industries that might want to follow suit. And
those guys are in there every week just tinkering away with it and trying to perfect it, because we've basically got three tanks hooked up to it that sort of emit the CO2 into it. And then I think at the start, it must be on a different breed of lettuce now, but the ones at the start weren't terrific, but now they're humming. They seem to be coming out real good.
Yeah, it's growing. They're like growing about 3 or 4 times faster than what they would on a farm, and taste amazing because there's no pesticides, so it's truly organic. Yeah, it's funny what you end up getting yourself into, growing lettuce and making prawn toast on the weekend. Yeah, it's good. I think it all goes back to supporting one of the values that was set really early in the business, which was we want to be able to give back in some way, and we do that through Landcare Australia, that partnership, but we also want to find ways to sort of do things better and reduce that impact, because it was important to Bob. It was one of his biggest things, really. So to kind of keep that promise and respect that part of his legacy, you know, while getting on with it is important.
I guess it's also making you relevant to a broader consumer base as well. I mean, one thing that does strike me about the Hawkes brand a little bit is that there must be sort of some younger consumers now to whom Bob Hawke doesn't really mean so much to what he does. You or I, who grew up in the 80s, there'd be a lot of younger consumers out there that it doesn't really have that level of depth. Is that something that you guys kind of think about?
All the time.
I've noticed outside one of the chains, there was like a big Hawks ad, and it was a younger person drinking a Hawks beer, and it was just kind of struck me that you were trying to position the brand as kind of being a bit younger than maybe it would have been if you'd put a picture of Bob up on the wall.
Yeah, you're right. And like I find myself talking about this a lot in terms of what it is that we are. And as I've been getting better at maybe articulating it to myself and then others over time, and I think it really goes back to, it was never really about Bob. It was about David and I yearning for those feelings that Australia gives us, because we were overseas at the time, so we were terribly homesick. On the other side of the world, where it was winter and it was summer over here, so we're just missing the sun and all those types of things that you love about being Australian, and that kind of emotional pull that the place has, and us trying to find a way to reconnect to that, literally through a business, I suppose, in the end, but also when we're here, and I think that's what people probably get out of the experience at the venue, is just that familiarity and that nostalgic familiarity. I don't know, like it's a it's the opposite of anxiety. It's really fast moving right now and everyone's in their phones, but time seems to stop when you're in that place. And whatever those feelings are, like, that's what we're trying to imbue in the brand. So Bob was more of a representation of that time and I guess a symbol of who we thought was a really great Australian and represented a lot of the values that we resonate with, and we think that a lot of Australians resonate, and younger Australians as well. So you're right. His legacy will live forever, but it fades, and his relevance fades over time, and there'll always be moments to celebrate him, but we have to be a brand that stands on its own without Bob. So we're trying to sort of do that. We're trying to kind of assert our own legacy, so to speak, as a culture, not just Dave and I, but like, this is the brand and a business that we're all building together. And, you know, he was an important part of that.
I also noticed recently you've done, you know, a bit of marketing activity with the Melbourne Street Press, Beat Magazine, I think it's called, online. So is that something that's building the brand in other states? Is that kind of a priority for you as well?
Yeah, absolutely. We always felt that, and Bob was pretty adamant, made us promise that we'd find national relevance at scale. So we've dibble-dabbled in the Melbourne market a little bit, but, you know, this year it's about having a real good crack. And I think there's obviously a lot of relevance with Bob, given he spent so much time down there and the union days and his time at the Curtin Hotel, which got saved, you know, where his favourite drinking hole down there was going to be sold off and turned into a block of apartments, but it was saved, and we'd pledged $10,000, or actually it was like even more, of free beer, basically, to if the venue was saved. And we're sort of probably going to use that venue as a bit of a base, as well as kind of like just that, such an interesting kind of inner North Melbourne area. So yeah, it's exciting just starting really there. It's going to be interesting. We'll be down at Gabs for the first time this year. We've never done a Gabs festival, which is crazy. So yeah, we'll be down in Melbourne, and yeah, we're one of the sponsors for Gabs this year. And
for the whole event?
Yeah, like not the major sponsor, but yeah, we really wanted to give it a good crack, and Brody's got a festival beer that he's going to release, so.
Basically 8.5% double hazy IPA. I brewed a few beers for Gabs before, and I know you can't just go there with a Vienna lager, so it was sort of go big or go home. And I guess to Nath's point earlier is to like legitimize us as a brewery and not just a brand, is to brew these styles and show to people that we can, you know, be more than a lager and a pale, and here's a 8.5% double hazy IPA. Tell us what you think. But it's a very interesting beer because it's using a hop that, it was probably popular a couple of years ago, but Sabro, which is huge on like a coconut cream type vibe, but very tropical. Team that up with Citra, using cryo hops as well. So it's super juicy and super hazy. It's fermenting away at the moment, actually. So yeah, pretty excited for that. But yeah, it won't be on the tap room for a little while because you can't tap it until the last Gabs is over.
Yeah, exactly.
So but, I think that's in June or July.
We've touched on some of the sort of general economic malaise that's out there. What are the market conditions? What are the sort of issues that you see as being concerns at the moment?
Cost of goods.
Yeah, actually, I just had Dave Padden from Akasha in here last week, and that was what he was pointing to, was just the cost of goods has just gone through the roof. So is that something that you guys are really feeling at the moment as well?
Yeah, we only just got a price rise for malt, goes up once a year, the price, but we just got a 19.5% price rise on malt. So that's pretty significant when, you know, we're not going to put our prices up by 19.5%, but you need to think of ways to reduce your costs, try and, you know, be more efficient, whether that be through your brew house or your yields or whatever. But yeah, you can't be absorbing those costs and not trying to find saving initiatives somewhere else, because consumers just won't put up with it, I don't think. They're kind of...
Because everyone's wages aren't going up, their rent's going up, their interest rates have gone up. Beer's hopefully a, you know, part of your discretionary spend that's a bit of a relief, not something you should have to like stress over as well. So we work really hard just looking in all the possible little dark corners to try and improve those cogs, and that's all through even logistics, even storage, all that. It's just... You know, that's why it's great to have, you know, good management and good CEO and really keep your eye on that P&L and, you know, kind of manage that effectively, particularly always, but particularly through these times, because the last thing we want to be doing is putting slabs of beer up $10. You know, it's just it's not realistic.
What are your thoughts on the health of the Marrickville precinct at the moment generally? Obviously, we mentioned Tribe earlier. It feels like a bit of a milestone to have the first brewery casualty of the area, unfortunately, in Stockade in the last few months. But then there's still Heaps Normals coming in soon.
A couple more on the horizon.
Yeah, well, maybe you can enlighten me after we stop recording. Do you feel like it's saturated at all, or do you feel like everyone's still doing okay from speaking to the other people in the area?
I hope so. I mean, well, Batch is around the corner from us, and so is Filter, and we go into either fairly often, and yeah, it seems good. What I will note is I'm finding with hospitality, people are still going out. I find that they're probably just going out a little bit less in terms of frequency and just for no reason, you know, like few cheeky beers after work kind of thing. I think they're actually investing in maybe that once a week or once a fortnight or whatever it is that works for them, sort of a deeper experience, a special experience. And breweries and tap rooms and venues around what we do like offer that. I actually think, and I don't think it's saturated in Marrickville at all, I'd love to see more pop up. You know, there's not many pubs here, to be honest. Like, there's a few, but like you sort of have to go more up towards Enmore and Newtown to kind of like start seeing that sort of type of format of venue. So yeah, I'm pumped to see more. I'm excited to see what Heaps Normal do. The guys have been good mates of ours for a long time now, and literally their office is just like two, three doors down. So we've been chatting to them about, you know, their project and what it is that we can do to help out. And I love that about our community. It's collegiate, it's collaborative, and yeah, I'm excited to see more.
Well, guys, thanks heaps for coming in, and really good to hear what you've been up to, and yeah, excited to watch it continue to unfold.
No, I really appreciate it. It's been good to chat. Thanks, cheers, mate. Yeah.